The U.S. loses, but will still advance. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Thomas Bradley. This is After the Score.
Welcome to After the Score from WOSU Public Media. I'm Steve Brown here with Thomas Bradley. This week, we'll break down the NBA draft and see if the Cavs made the right choice in Andrew Wiggins.
And former head coach of the Ohio State Buckeyes is settling into his role at Youngstown State. We'll get an update on that.
But first, as we said, the U.S. will advance to the knockout round after losing to Germany.
Yeah, well, they got second place in the group play despite the loss to Germany. They won a tiebreaker over Portugal. They had four total points in the group play, and they will move on that second seed out of the group of death.
Was it really the group of death?
It turned out to be the group of death. A lot of teams beating up on each other. And if you look at the teams coming in, it was, no matter how the U.S. got out, some people say they backed into that second place role, but they really did play well. They got their win over Ghana. They got a heartbreaking tie to Portugal that really should have been a win if they have 30 more seconds to blow the whistle. One bad play led to their first goal, and then a mental error in the last seconds led to Portugal's second goal. So they really did outplay a majority of the opponents in that group. They were outplayed by Germany. Germany is a favorite to go on deep in the World Cup, and the U.S., quite frankly, is not. So they were better than the other two teams in that group, and they deserve to move on.
How does the U.S. stack up against Germany, against Belgium, who they will play on Tuesday?
Belgium is their next opponent. They'll play them Tuesday. And Belgium is a dark horse for a lot of experts to go far. So it's a tough matchup for the USA. They're going to be dependent on some of their injuries coming back and being able to play. Right now, Jozy Altidore did not play his last two games because of his hamstring injury, and he's been listed as day-to-day. They really need him to be able to recover and step up because he's a vital part of their forward offense. When the final roster came out for the World Cup, everybody kind of looked at the U.S.'s roster and was like, okay, you should have a backup for every field player out there in case something goes wrong. And you looked at it and you did not see one for Jozy Altidore and a couple of other players. They had good young studs that are on their way up in the program at different positions, but no one was a clear backup for Jozy Altidore, and that seemed to hurt them in creating offense in the Portugal game and in creating any offense in the Germany game.
Can South America survive the Brazil-Chile game on Saturday?
South America is going to explode. That's the first game
of the knockout round
is Brazil and Chile, and it's going to be, or Chile, sorry. It's going to be an explosive game. Brazil goes nuts for games. They're the host country. I expect them to win, but it's going to be one of the biggest televised events in South American history.
Who you got right now, Germany or Brazil? I'm going Brazil.
If those are my only two choices?
Yeah, only two. I don't know. Those seem like the two prohibitive favorites. Who else might you pick? Who do you think is the most dangerous team right now?
The Netherlands looked really good in the group play this year, and they were runners-up in the 2010 World Cup. They lost to Spain in the final match, and they've got their stud back from that game, and he's going to be an impact maker in Robin van Persie, and I think the Netherlands can make a run, and you can't count out the best player in the world. You can't count out Lionel Messi in Argentina. That is a team that will be able to compete with anyone. They have speed like no other team, and they can turn around a game in an instant. Lionel Messi on track to become one of the greatest World Cup players since Maradona. Lionel Messi and Argentina are a real team to reckon with.
Thomas, as I'm sure you saw, another exciting draft for Cleveland sports fans.
With the first pick in the 2014 NBA draft, the Cleveland Cavaliers select Andrew Wiggins from Toronto and the University of Kansas.
NBA Commissioner Adam Silver there on Thursday night announcing Andrew Wiggins, top pick, going to the Cavs. I have my jersey, Thomas Steele.
I love this pick. I don't have a jersey yet, but I love this pick from the Cavs. They didn't mess it up. They didn't do what I expected Cleveland to do.
There's still time. There's still time for Cleveland to mess it up.
They cannot mess up. If they put their troops behind Andrew Wiggins, he might need another year or so to develop, but with how much of a freak athlete this guy is, how much of a pure ball scorer is, this was the correct pick. If it doesn't pan out, no one's blaming Cleveland for this.
They will.
Cleveland will blame Cleveland, but it's the smart pick.
It's the money pick. It's definitely the highest ceiling. Jabari Parker could probably come in and get 15 a game right away, but Wiggins has by far the most upside.
I love the pick, and especially with Joel Embiid's foot injury a couple days before the draft, it looked like Cleveland might be flirting with Embiid, but his foot injury kind of put him out of the running for that top overall pick, and they attempted to make a trade for Kevin Love with Minnesota, and that fell through because Kevin Love didn't want to sign long-term, and that was the end of that. So the Cavs put their eggs in the Andrew Wiggins basket.
Good. That's a good place for them. If we run down the first few picks, the Cavs took Wiggins number one, Jabari Parker number two went to the Bucks. As you said, Joel Embiid went number three to the 76ers. Mm-hmm. The Magic picked up Aaron Gordon, 6'9", power forward out of Arizona with the number four pick. Five was Dante Exum, the first foreigner. That's a change, not seeing a foreigner go until pick five. And that pretty much does it. Marcus Smart, I guess, at number six. He was a great player out of Oklahoma State. That's the first few picks. In the second round, the Cavs picked up Joe Harris, a 6'6" swingman out of Virginia. Also of note, for the first time in 7 years, no Buckeyes drafted.
No Buckeyes drafted. Aaron Kraft had an outside chance. LaQuentin Ross had more of a chance, but probably...
Yeah, great decision by him to go pro.
Yeah, probably not the best decision by him to leave a year early, but he thought he had a chance. People in his ear thought he had his chance. I want to go back to the number four pick, Aaron Gordon. I felt like he went a little higher than people were guessing. He's out of Arizona. A great player, but really unpolished. He has potential. I thought... He went a little high. That's just a small observation there. And I like the pick of the Utah Jazz for Dante Exum. Clearly, if he had played in the United States and played college basketball, he could have been a number one pick in any year. But he decided to play in Australia, so there's always a little red flags there with the competition he's up against. I think the Utah Jazz at five got a steal with Dante Exum.
The highest or the biggest reach to me seemed Nick Stauskas to the Kings at number eight.
You just don't like Michigan. Nick Stauskas is a very good player. He probably shouldn't have gone that high. The Kings probably could have traded down a few picks, but I think they're very happy with their pick.
He's a slightly better J.J. Redick.
Well,
that's who Nick Stauskas is.
J.J. Redick had a decent career. I think Nick Stauskas will fit in well with the Kings system. If you look at who else was available at that time. They could have taken Doug McDermott. That'd be a little bit of a reach. I guess Noah Vonleh of Indiana could have been their pick there. He went the very next pick to the Charlotte Hornets. But I don't think the Nick Stauskas pick was unreasonable, but it did seem a bit of a reach.
Yeah, he's a poor man's Jimmer Fredette. Thomas, you might remember this minor football coach named Jim Tressel.
Ah, the old football coach, Jim Tressel.
Yeah. Yeah. Jim Tressel, yeah.
He was ousted from Ohio State 3 years ago after the Tattoo Gate scandal. It led to bowl bans, money given back, sanctions, loss of scholarships, and ultimately led to Urban Meyer being the head coach of
3 years ago,
Ohio State.
It was almost
exactly 3 years ago. May 31st was his last day. 3 years ago.
And he has settled into his job at Youngstown State University. He's one weekend. He does take over a school struggling with declining graduation rates, also a nearly $10 million budget shortfall. He sat down with Jeff St. Clair from Ohio Public Radio Station WKSU about facing those challenges.
14 years after he was a winning coach there, Jim Tressel is back at Youngstown State University. Tressel led the Penguins to 4 national titles before heading to Columbus, where he became the third winningest coach in Buckeye history. Tressel left OSU in 2011 following a scandal involving players trading football paraphernalia for tattoos. He spent 2 years as a top administrator at the University of Akron, and today took over the top job at YSU. I asked Tressel how it feels to begin this new phase in his career.
Well, you know, it's an exciting moment. Youngstown State means a lot to myself and my family, and you know, to think we have an opportunity to serve them again, it's exciting for us. you know how the first day is. You're signing forms and listening to speeches about benefits. And it's kind of like picture day before preseason football camp. You just want to get that over with so you can get to work.
Tressel inherits steep challenges at Youngstown State, especially in turning around declining enrollment, retention, and graduation rates. He says a campus-wide focus on personally connecting with students is the first step in reversing those trends.
We have to totally believe, every single one of us that work here at Youngstown State, that it is all of our job to increase our retention and then graduation rate. It's every single one, everyone that bumps into a student, everyone that serves a student, everyone that teaches a student, everyone that advises a student. You know, that has to be our passion.
Tressel sees a direct link between improving student retention rates and solving the school's financial troubles.
If our graduation rate became better, I think we would find our budget would take care of itself, you know, as long as we're intelligent about and watching the university's budget like we watch our own at home. You know, I think we'll be in good shape if we can get better.
Tressel is not only starting his job as president 10 days early, he's hitting the ground running as a massively popular figure in the Mahoning Valley.
And it is a little bit of an advantage. As I come in back to the university, I've got a lot of relationships already. Unfortunately, I've got a lot of people I've met, and I recognize their face, and I can't pull their name because it was 14 years ago.
Jim Tressel felt a base pay of $300,000 was adequate for the job as president of Youngstown State University. That's $75,000 less than he was offered. He officially takes over July 1st. For Ohio Public Radio, I'm Jeff St. Clair.
And that will do it for this week's edition of After the Score. You can always find us at WOSU.org/AfterTheScore and on Twitter at After the Score.
You can also stream the show using the WOSU Public Media mobile app, and you can also download it on iTunes. Until next week, I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Thomas Bradley.